Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Nathan Fox. I'm one of the co-founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. Ben Olson's not here today. Instead, I have a guest, Christy Long. Christy, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You're here to tell a bit of a success story, and you already have an outline how you want to do it. So why don't you just go ahead and launch right in?
Sure. So I will preface this with, I wouldn't admit from the outright it was a success story. I think it was a happy accident success story. So maybe not anything to strive for at the outset, but still good to hear. So I actually started my LSAT studies kind of officially in January of 2021. I enrolled with the Seven Sage LSAT program because I had found that I really liked their analytics at the time, like the specifics with the different question types, all of that, which, as I've now learned, really doesn't matter. So I had signed up for that. And I'm also someone who works best with a deadline. So I went ahead and signed up for the June 2021 LSAT at the same time, which ended up being a mistake.
Yep.
So I started with that program. And I also had tried scouring the internet for all kinds of resources. So I ended up stumbling upon the Thinking LSAT podcast after looking at Spotify and started hearing you guys in February. So after hearing some of the immediate mentalities of just, hey, start the test, stop worrying about it, just get into studying. I took a cold diagnostic and got a 155, which, you know, nothing terrible, but I, of course, was not very impressed. So I immediately was very determined to try and improve that. So after doing that, throughout kind of the first half of 2021, I was very much haphazard with my studying. So it wasn't consistent. I didn't do my hour a day. I didn't always do reviews. I just kind of looked, found when I had time with work and kind of worked around that, which is also why I was getting inconsistent results. So realizing in May of 21 that I would not be ready for the June test, I ended up pushing it to August at first and then realizing that was still way too optimistic. So then I pushed it again until February of 22, which I ultimately did sit for. So I only had to push it twice. Okay. So at that point, around May or June, I realized I was not seeing the results that I had thought I would with Seven Sage. And after listening to you guys daily with the podcast, going all the way back into the archives, I signed up for the LSAT Demon Premium. So not the live yet, just the premium one. And I loved it. I was so engrossed with the analytics and the algorithms and basically making sure that you were working to your own level rather than trying to just see what the hardest one you could do was. So once I started switching to the Demon Premium in about October of 21, I was doing about one or two tests a week and, you know, maybe a section or so a day. And that was when I started seeing my scores go up into the 160s, 170s. Yeah, I broke 170 in December of 21. So really only 2 months of studying, like not 2 months, but the two proper months of studying, I got between a 165, 175, almost every test. And so I took the February test going into it with a positive mindset because I had been scoring consistently in the range of about, I think at that point, every test I had was either between a 172 and a 176. So I was like, great, we can take the test. Unfortunately, I sat down and immediately had complete test anxiety because I was not prepared for the virtual proctor environment and how that would end up taking a toll on my mental state during the exam. Like, I vividly remember staring at the first reading comp section I got from the February exam and just rereading lines over and over because I'm like, I can't grasp this. I'm too distracted by the person that's possibly watching me right now. Like, I don't want tech issues. My internet might go out. So I did not have the right mindset. So I didn't do as well as I would have liked on the February exam. So I ended up getting a 162, which is obviously very, very solid. But again, I knew I could do better. So I had also unfortunately missed the March registration deadline by about a day. So I immediately signed up for April. And at this point, I switched plans from the Demon Premium to Demon Live so that I could make sure that I was consistently doing the same amount of work. And so that was where doing regular classes helped.
Okay. So Daemon Premium has all of our resources except for the live classes. Premium has all the explanations, all the videos, all the questions, all the tests, all the analytics, the drilling, everything, the ask button. So you can get help that way. It has all that stuff, but it sounds like you went to live to get yourself a bit of commitment buy-in.
The nudge.
How does that work? How did you experience that?
Yeah. So I ended up actually taking my Outlook calendar for work and I blocked an hour every single day from noon to one. And I just attended whatever class I could at that day, whether that was, you know, reading comprehension or something with games or regardless. And it was really just to make sure that every single day I put my best hour forward towards the LSAT.
Love that.
And I think that it was also nice to all have kind of a community of people available if I wanted to see like, hey, I'm sitting in this class and I don't really resonate with the explanation being given. Can I just ping someone and see if they can help? And every time that I had that encounter, it was one of my peers immediately came to my rescue, which was awesome.
Yeah, it's just amazing because I was never able to do that in the live classroom. In the live classroom, I knew there were smart people there, but you can't have the star in the class helping other students while you're trying to say something. But on Zoom, it's all miraculously possible. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't have to tell people to quiet down, please, because I'm trying to make a point. In fact, I do the exact opposite of that. Just encourage people to use that chat. I never would have imagined that that would happen, but the public chat and I'm sure there's private chat, tons of people helping each other in tons of ways on the Daemon. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was very, very thankful for the live option and just doing that regularly and basically already having sat for one exam, I think kind of made the world of difference for my next sitting because I went into it. I worked out in the morning, getting my heart rate up after realizing that helps with your brain power, making sure that good breakfast, everything like that. And also going in with the mindset of, okay, my camera's going to be on. Someone may be watching me at any point. And lo and behold, I ended up having technicality complications with the April LSAT. As I know that you've heard of all of the horror stories, my proctor ended up just disappearing and I ended up having to wait between my last section for about an hour and a half for someone to come back online and like give me the password to go onto the section. But at that point, I was already like, I've crushed the first three sections. This last one's Logic Games, which is my favorite. This nothing can go wrong except for maybe my blood sugar is a little low because I'm hungry. But other than that, it was just very nice already having the confidence to perform my best, even amid any type of uncertainties.
Awesome. And it worked out.
And it worked out. I scored a 174, which looking back, if anything, I may be a little nitpicky and try and get a couple extra points if I have time. But
we don't call that nitpicky. I'm about to teach a class called Get Greedy on the LSAT. I mean, I'm encouraging people. 174 is great. 174 is also not the 75th percentile at Yale. So there are a lot of people who are doing better. So you shouldn't judge yourself. Rather, you should just say, well, okay, do I have practice test scores that are higher than that? Or do I think I could get practice test scores that are higher than that? And why not? If I do think, or if I know, if I look at my practice test record and I go, well, I've got 177s, 178s before, then I see no reason not to take it because law schools are only going to care about your highest score. And a lower score just doesn't matter. It doesn't change your highest score. Mm-hmm. So I see lots of upside and no downside.
That's true. That's where I'm still considering it. We'll see if I still have the mental interest in pushing back a few points after I finish all of the other application stuff. But
deadline is tomorrow to sign up for the October test.
Okay, that is great to know. So I won't miss it by a day.
Yeah, that's not tomorrow as you hear this recording, but tomorrow, September 1st, is the deadline to sign up for October. So if you are thinking about it, you gotta decide. But you know, I don't think, Christy, for you, I don't think it would cost you a whole lot in terms of time or effort to prep. You've done it. Mm. You know that you're not starting over. You're just kind of staying sharp with all the things. You know how to play the game. You just have to kind of get out there and, you know, play a little bit. And then 6 weeks later, you take the test. And if you score higher, now you're a 177 instead of a 174. I would not get greedy if I were in your shoes. So ultimately for you to decide, of course. Starting diagnostic again?
155. So a jump of 19 points.
19 points so far. And
yes.
you know, we might have to update this if you do decide to get greedy and score a few points higher. What can I ask what your highest practice test score ever is right now?
I believe my highest test practice was a 178.
Yeah, I mean, I would be awful tempted to sit and take it again. You know what experience is going to be like. It, you know, you could have Proctor U distractions again and it could suck and you could just say, OK, forget it. But it could go totally smoothly and you could get a really manageable test or one that's like just for whatever reason, it suits you. Mm-hmm. And you just kill all four games and you feel really good about the reading comp and the logical reasoning. And next thing you know, you've boosted your score yet again with very, very minimal downside and limited investment. Sorry, that's not the purpose to try to convince you.
No, but I appreciate it. And that's part of why I mentioned it was just because I'm like, I don't know. You are the expert. So I didn't know if it would make sense to still consider or if it really is just a wasted effort. But it sounds like it makes most sense to just sign up and see how it goes.
It sounds like a fairly clear yes to me. I mean, I can't think of why you wouldn't. You don't have to hold off applications or anything like that, because you know, if they evaluate you with your 174, great, that's awesome. But if they wait because they see that you're taking the LSAT again, they're going to know that you have a 174 and think you can score higher. So I don't see how that possibly hurts you.
That's a very good point. I didn't realize they could see that I was registered and then consider.
So it varies school by school, and they sometimes have check boxes on their application, like, would you like us to hold your application? Although we just recently heard a story about them, one school just somehow, I guess, neglecting that checkbox. So someone had checked it and they then got a denial letter. And it was like, well, you have a score on record. We evaluated your application. And so you just, that's the type of thing that you have to be careful about. But you wouldn't have to be careful about that because your 174 isn't going to get you insta denied like anywhere. That is great. What else did you run through your whole agenda, or do you have more stuff that you wanted to talk about?
That was my outline, at least. I wanted to make sure that I just remembered my specific story because, I mean, to be honest, I've even socialized the LSAT since like 2015 when I was an undergrad still, because I was like, I like exams and this one seems fun. So maybe I should just learn it. Like, I have my old GMAT book and an old LSAT book from 2015 just for that exact reason. And I distinctly remember being on vacation with my parents while I was in college, sitting at the pool somewhere and like doing the logic game where you have like four numbers and it's the one where you have to try and put it in the order of what they are. I think it's the like one of the free tests that you have on the LSAT, the Demon Free.
Yep.
I like distinctly remember that just being like, this is so much fun. And people looking at me like, who is this weird girl doing work on the pool side?
Yeah, but you were like a natural then for this test, because if you can treat it that way, if you can decide that it's a fun puzzle that you get to work on, and you know, how much different is this from maybe I like Sudoku, or maybe I like Wordle, or maybe I like other whatever strategy games. And it really is just kind of a strategy game that you can learn and you can get really good at. And it's fun to be good at it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. If anything, too, I think that the interesting part of like being super critical with the test is at the time when I was like prepping for my last couple of months, I was more commonly getting to the part where I hated all five answers. Yep. And if I rarely, if ever, was debating between two good ones. It was always, okay, none of these make sense. Which one makes the closest amount of sense? And like trying to deduce that.
No, it's not. But then, yeah, you got to the point where you were like, well, there's not a second best answer. There's just kind of none of these answers.
They're all
bad. Like any of them. and yet you can figure out how to get that question right anyway, because you're like, well, you clearly didn't intend that to be correct. No, I cannot vouch for that. Nope. There's no way in hell I'm picking that. And then you find one where you're like, well, okay. I mean, maybe you meant this other thing. And then you can even get to the point where now it makes perfect sense, because you're like, well, I hated it the first time through, but I know one of these has to be right. And then when you look at it again, you go, oh, I just interpret this one word in this other way. And now it clicks 100% into focus. It makes perfect sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the answer. Mm-hmm. Next one. And that's a fun game too, right? It's just so satisfying to unlock. Yeah. How did you were just naturally like that? Or do you think that's something that can be cultivated?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it's definitely something that can be cultivated, because I think at first when I started studying, I did not have that right critical mentality. And I definitely remember my first couple of months studying, I was always kind of like, oh, well, this could make sense, or this could also be right. But you have to continue to tell yourself, no, this test was written by lawyers who want you to like get this wrong. You need to outsmart them and figure out what they actually mean and read the words and see what they're saying. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the biggest takeaway, is you just need to think critically.
That does not mean that it is a test of traps.
Oh, no. It, correct.
I do not want people to hear that and go, oh, yeah, so it can't be that one because that one's too obvious. So it's got to be this other one that I don't understand. That leads to imposter syndrome errors all the time.
Yes.
The absolutely. One that makes perfect sense, that's the answer. The majority of the questions are straightforward and easy. But then when you can't find an answer, or if you just actively don't dislike all five, then you do have to remember, oh, but one of them is definitely correct and it's on the page. And I just have to it's kind of like lowering your standards a little bit. But you only do that after you already passed on all five in the first place, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's definitely only for like the hardest of hardest questions, not any of the average ones by any means.
I was talking to a student today who helpfully was willing to volunteer in class, that they had that one was my runner up. And then this one. And I'm like, your runner up, like that was my runner up. And I was right that she had actually been doing the questions that way, like looking for a runner up.
Interesting.
Yeah. I had never heard that before, but it echoes some like terrible bullshit that I heard from, I think, Princeton Review or something, like, well, you don't have time to really figure it out. So what you do is you go through and get rid of the three worst ones and then decide between the two that are left. That is a terrible, terrible way of doing the test. And you need to be more like Christy and find that, like, well, it's either obviously this one, or I don't like any of the five, but I still know that it's this one because I figured it out.
Exactly.
Amazing. Who's that in your lap? We should have done this sooner.
Sparkles. So Sparkles is my 6-month-old teacup Pomeranian, who I got as a present to myself the Saturday after I took my April LSAT, because I knew I did well after, even before getting my score. And I always wanted a puppy, and she's great.
How long have you had her?
I've had her now for about 4 months.
What is the puppy owning life like? Is it everything it's cracked up to be?
You know, it's a lot of responsibility. No, it's wonderful. If anything, it's great to have an excuse to get out of the house and get some more exercise in, get some steps.
Universal excuse to bail on any party early as well. You can always just say, got to go let the dog out.
Exactly. It's the best excuse I should have learned years ago. Yeah.
Well, congratulations on Sparkles, your LSAT dog. Congratulations on all of your improvement. Do you have any other tips that you would like to share for People who are trying to make the, you made the 19 point leap, might get more than that.
I think the biggest piece of advice I would have for anyone that's trying to navigate this journey is don't overthink your prep. So I went into it thinking I needed to learn contra positives and right. all of the specific stupid jargon that helps LSAT teachers stay in business that aren't you guys. And I focus way too much on that rather than just getting to business and doing the test. And I think that that is exactly what people just need to do. And it's hard because lawyer type personalities don't like being bad at things. So you don't want to see scores in the 150s, low 160s after you put in effort, but you just have to, because that's the only way you can get better.
Well, it's like practicing any sport. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like shooting free throws. You're not going to read theory about reading about shooting free throws. You're going to just go shoot damn free throws. And I'm not saying that the theory can't help, but you can't even understand the theory until you start shooting some free throws. And then maybe you could read up on various techniques or how high you're supposed to throw, optimal
the launch angles and the geometry of whatever.
But really, you can't do that until you're actually doing the act. Reading mm-hmm. about it in theory is never going to work. And the same would go for, you know, riding a bike or playing golf or whatever. Like, you have to go out and bang range balls. Like, just you're going to look gross. You're not good mm-hmm. at golf. But there's exactly. no point in like trying to get good in your basement or something before you ever go to the driving range. You just go hit a bunch of shots and try to get better. So yeah, that's cool. That's a really useful tip. What else should people do? They should dive right in. They should start doing drilling, probably, huh? Some drilling, individual sections, time sections at some point.
Yes, all of the above. And okay. also just making sure to stay sharp with your reading. I think that's also the biggest way that I felt complacent at times was, okay. oh, I've been reading my whole life. It's fine. But you haven't been reading the way that you need to be until you What's just continue difference? To practice. Understanding which details to care about and which ones to ignore. Or gloss over more so.
How do you do that?
By understanding the main point.
Just by understanding what you're reading, right?
Yes.
Like, yes, there are parts of the reading comprehension passage which they can't ask you a question on literally everything. There are parts that are meant to be just kind of like, well, here's a list of examples of those. And you do tune in to like, yeah, okay, I don't have to memorize that list.
Exactly.
But the only way to know what stuff is important and what stuff is not important is by understanding all of it. Mm-hmm. And then with some of it, you just kind of go, yeah, okay, that's that box of stuff over there. Here's how it relates to the main point. But I don't necessarily need to know all that detail.
Exactly. I think that's critical.
Christy, thank you very much for coming on the show. You're applying this cycle?
I am, yes. So working on stuff for that, getting my personal statement edited by Leslie, who is amazing. Highly recommend her.
Yep. Leslie Blodgett, a personal statement editor on staff at the Demon. She's awesome. If you do want to pay somebody for one-on-one help with your essays and, what you doing for the next year before starting law school?
So I will continue to work. So right now I am in a corporate strategy role and I am going to continue to make money while I can and hopefully get a couple of months off before starting school. But other than that, I think just kind of doing the same grind that I have been for the last couple of years.
Awesome. Cool. Email daily at LSATdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thank you, Christy Long, for coming on the show and sharing your story. I do hope you take it again and score even higher. We'll have to do an update.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks for listening.